like that.
Hell yeah, hey DJ, bring that back.
When I move, you move.
Just like that.
When I move, you move.
Just like that.
When I move, you move.
Just like that.
Hell yeah, hey DJ, bring that back.
Hello and welcome to the Coach's Box for this, the 1st of May edition, the 180th show of the Coach's Box. My name is Monty, and the next voice you're going to hear is Molly. We are both Hawthorn supporters, so we are relieved, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of Hawk talk later on in the show. But we have a lot to get through, and we're starting late, even later than usual, Molly, so we probably should get right into all the things we'd have to talk about, shouldn't we?
We should. I was just checking my place on the leaderboard here.
Which leaderboard? Oh, the leaderboard, yes. So what Molly is referring to is there is something which not a lot of people know about quite yet, but it's been posted on the coaches board on the fan footy forums, which only people who've posted, I think it's 1,000 messages on the fan footy forum get access to. That's the part of the badges you get on the fan footy forum. And this is a new initiative from FanFooty. I've partnered with Big Door, which is an American company, and they do something called gamification, Molly, which you might have heard if people who have visited the NFL.com site or the MLB.com site. I think NBA.com has it as well.
I think it does.
So you log in and you're... apart from all the other things that you get from normal logins, being able to comment and being able to do all this and that, this is the gamification is turning what are normal everyday actions like commenting or even just viewing articles or viewing videos or looking at a web page of any description, that can actually become part of a game. And the game is the name of the game in terms of the Fan Footy Rewards Program, which is what I'm calling it, is to earn coins, and then those coins can then be redeemed for products in the manner of a frequent flyer or a supermarket rewards program. So exactly what those products will be, you can redeem them for, will obviously be rolled out in the next few months, but it is still at a fairly early stage. So at the moment, you can't earn enough points to actually buy anything yet, because if I did, then you'd have 1,000 people all wanting to buy or wanting to redeem something, and I haven't got that much money. But so the point of it is to inject a little bit of fun back into the every week. Viewing of content on sites like FanFooty, and I might bring other sites into the mix as well. But if you follow the instructions, if you are a member of the coaches board tonight, if you're listening to this podcast tonight, but it will as of tomorrow, tomorrow being Thursday, I think by the end of the day tomorrow, it should be rolled out for pretty much everyone. I think only about 5% of users can see it now. But anyway, it will be rolled out for everyone, so you'll be able to see what I'm talking about. So, Molly, have you been able to access the system? Can you explain it better than I just have?
I don't know that I can, but just basically there's a coin system. There's a little a dashboard down the bottom right of your screen at the moment, and it gives you a chance to do some quests, which basically walk you through some of the functionality of the site that, maybe even as a long-time user of fan footy you haven't done. So that's what I like. There's a few different quests that you can go through to do things like learn about the different tools that are available to you and how to search for players by name, which, most people know, but for new players isn't. And then there's for other actions, you can get points and badges.
Badges is another big thing. So this is something which obviously people are familiar with from things like Foursquare. I think even someone mentioned Zynga today. There's a bit of an injection of that sort of game-related imagery. Everything looks shiny and colourful, like a Zynga game. That's intentional, I suppose, that... obviously, FanFooty's colour scheme is pretty much white and black and yellow and red and orange, but which obviously also goes through the Fantafooty reward system. But the badges are nice and colourful, and hopefully, as the system evolves, you'll get places to show off your badges, a bit like I don't know if you're a Battlefield 3 player. I played that extensively about a year ago, Molly, and I enjoyed the fact. And you know, if you're a big Xbox player or a PlayStation player, you can show off your achievements in a publicly available page. That's not quite ready yet with gamification systems like those of Big Door, but that'll be coming as well. And I mean, this is something where a lot of companies do this to make sort of relatively boring custom management functions fun for the users, but with a site like FanFooty, people come to FanFooty and they're ready to play games. So I can do more with the gamification concept, and I'll be able to push it into ways that not even NFL.com or MLB.com have pushed it. So this is something which is going to be happening over a couple of years, and it's obviously very early stages, and it's not by any means finished or in a final state as yet, but it's something which I'll be evolving with constant feedback from users, as with every other thing from FanFooty. And of course, you, Molly, being the ultimate Uber user, I'll be valuing your feedback more than anyone, because you are the ultimate FanFooty user, and a lot of your ideas have made it into FanFooty, and I thank you for doing that over the course of 7 or 8 years it has been now. And I mean, many of the innovations on FanFooty have come directly from user feedback, and you're the main one of those, Molly. So you, and I'm sure many of the listeners of the Coach's Box and just regular users of FanFooty, will tell me what you like and what you don't like about this system, and where you think it can go, where it can actually inject some more fun back into the FanFooty experience.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how it goes, and as you say, rolling out soon. So it looks good so far, and I'm sure it'll only get better from here on in. And the weekend will, I think, be really great to see how it works with the chat and whatnot.
Speaking of chat, Tilt Raves in the chat for the Coach's Box asks, badges or badgers with an R? No, badges without an R. Badges, no, we're not giving away any badges, because, that'd be illegal, I think, in this country.
Unfortunately, the Animal Protection Society ruled out that. That was our first idea.
Yeah, but, well, I don't think badgers are actually very nice pets, because they smell and they scratch. They're pretty much as bad as koalas, and so I'm not going to be giving away any koalas either, I'm so sorry to say. But anyway, apart from that silliness, let's get on to the other bit of silliness before we get on to the round review, Molly. We need to give away a Capstar cap, as we did last week, to Heavy. Now, Heavy is banned from this week because he's already got one. But we do have a number of people in the chat, and you have a question there ready to ask for the next winner of the Capstar cap.
Okay, so... Ooh. So the question being... Who are the four players who have scored 150-plus in DT this year?
And Heavy, you are banned from giving the answers. I hope Heavy got his cap. Waiting for the people in the chat to figure it out. Sing out names whenever you like. Come on, Tilt Rays, I know you're up for it. Jazzo7. There's a guy called Loose I've never seen before. He's in here, obviously, for the cap.
No, I hope it's not a second account for Heavy. Yeah. We're watching you, Loose.
That's right. Hang on. Heavy, Loose? Is that like the reverse of Heavy? Yeah, that's a bit dodgy, isn't it? Perhaps we'll have to wait for everyone to do the...
get on with the round review.
Let's get on around. Let's
see how it goes.
All right.
Maybe we've stumped them.
I shall look back at the chat and see how we're going with that one. So, the round review starts, of course, with the Anzac Day game on last Thursday, Molly. And I suppose the first cap off the rank here is a boy who is on the bubble. So, we are talking about Dream Team and Supercoach here. And we use the phrase on the bubble to refer to players who have play their second game this week. So this is the, assuming they get a game the next week, that'll be the first week that their price changes, as what we refer to as boys on the bubble. So Jason Windlick is a bubble boy at a price of $272,000 in Dream Team, but he's scored some pretty nice scores so far, culminating with a ton in both competitions in that game. His role was pretty much to keep Heath Shaw occupied. I'm not sure he did a great role at that, because Shaw managed to score some big points as well, but it does look like he's got a spot in that forward line for the foreseeable future. He's better than a lot of other players they've tried through there in the preseason and the early part of the season. Nick Comer probably being most notable of those. Do you think Windlick's JS is much better than Comer's, and thus he's going to be able to play that role at a you know, scoring anywhere near what he got on the weekend?
Yeah, I'm not sure that he's going to be able to continue to do that the whole time. Yeah, he's gonna have some good games here and there, and I think he kicked a few goals, so that really helped out his score a lot. And on the day, that's what they needed. They sort of really did dominate Collingwood to the point where Pendlebury's coming out and so's Buckley saying that, you know, their midfield isn't running back far enough. So I think he won't do that all the way through the season, but with a break even of 31. He's an interesting prospect that you know, maybe could average 60 to, you know, 70 to 80. He's a forward, so, you know, there's some flexibility there. So he's one to consider, but I think we're going to have troubles elsewhere this week, and that could hurt his prospect of being picked up by more coaches this week.
I mean, he's still priced at 55 in Dream Team and less than 50 in Supercoach. So if he's going to be averaging sort of mid-60s to 70, he's still, I mean, obviously his price hasn't changed yet, so he's obviously value. But yes, as you say, it does look like there's going to be carnage in the backs. That's probably the big headline for this week for those who have a lot of the popular backs who we'll get to, I'm sure, over the course of the show. And just to round out the Essendon talk, another player who is on the bubble, who we talked about last week, Molly Scott Gumbleton. He had a ton, I believe, in both competitions in the first week and delivered a 54 and 65 this week. That just quickly, that does seem to be more like what he would score on a weekly basis, wouldn't it? The 54s and 60s.
Yes, that's probably about where you'd expect him to be around. You know, I'm just looking at his stats line, and it's 2 goals, 10 disposals, 5 marks. That's about his game. So, and you know, that's about where his implied price is at. So, you know, he does have a negative break even, and therefore could get through, you know, a price rise. He's going to be hurt by the fact that 100's going to drop straight off.
Yep.
But,
as we always say, the third week is far more important than the first week in as far as price rises in the virtual sports competitions.
Yeah, so that's going to hurt him, because, you know, his price will go up and therefore put pressure if he can't put up another ton in the next week or two.
We're getting some answers in the chat, but we're not quite getting 4 out of 4 yet. We're getting, I think every one of the 4 has been mentioned, but not all at once. So,
It's not mentioned yet.
No. Right, on the Collingwood side of that game, Molly Steele's side bottom, he's not on the bubble, but he appears in the roller coaster this week, which of course is the, he does appear on the roller coaster, because the poor score he got against Hawthorn in round 3 has come out of his price this week, so he has got tons in every other all of the 4 other games, so he is currently underpriced, even though in those 4 games he's been averaging, well, he's got a minimum of 106, so his average across the 5 games is less than that, and he has actually gone down by $45,000 in Dream Team and $35,000 in Supercoach, but his break even is about 50s, and he's scoring well over 100s every week, and obviously the The game on the weekend delivered him. Now, did he actually get the medal? He should have got it if he didn't get it. I believe he did get
no,
it.
No, it was Zaharakis.
Yeah. Oh, that's right, because of course he wasn't on the winning team, of course. But if Collingwood would, had won, I'm sure he would have got the Anzac Day medal. But, yes, side bottom without Beams. We talked about that two or three weeks ago, Molly, about how he was going to be a big candidate for an improvement. Obviously, around that... Hawthorn game. That Hawthorn game was an anomaly, but outside of that, he's been gold. So he is currently underpriced. Do you think he's? Well, where do you think his average settles at for the rest of the year? Given that Beams, I believe, is still about 2 to 4 weeks away.
Yeah, I think he'll average around the 105 to 115 mark over the year. And I mean, if you can be lucky to, I mean, one of the games that's going to bring down his average is already on the table. So, you know, I think there's some value in him being able to, you know, play a lot of good games during the year. And, you know, as you say, with the price drop that came from the Hawthorn game, there's a lot to like about him. I know at one stage I did have him in my side as a possible trade this week. Probably some of the carnage in the back line probably forced me to rethink that and maybe come up with a better option. So, but I think he's definitely one to watch out for.
Jazzo7 in the chat has won the Capstar Cap. I will be emailing him later, him or her. I'm not sure whether Jazzo7 has ever figured out. We've ever figured out if the Jazzo7 is male or female. But anyway, I shall be emailing...
Or as Rex Hunt would say, a convertible.
Indeed. So, Jazzo7 will be getting a cap. It'll be either a Blues, Saints, Dons or Crows one, because those are the ones still available after Heavy took out the Eagles one last week. Right, speaking of the Saints, we shall move on to the Saints, and Nick Riewoldt is one of those players who has scored 150 this week. I'm not sure anyone saw that coming, Molly. 150 in both competitions. He did a lot of running up the ground, and it does seem like the structure they had down there with Kaczynski back in the forward line, Stanley, I think, was in defence, and they had Tom Lee, I suppose, as also being more of a stay-at-home forward. So the structure there certainly allowed Riewoldt to play up the ground, and Sydney seemed to like... I mean, he basically played pretty much half the game on the halfback flank, and it actually worked for St Kilda because they almost pinched that game. They were pretty close to pinching it. Now, Sydney games tend to be fairly low scoring anyway, so theoretically you should be able to be in a position to pinch a game like that if you can score four goals unanswered in the last quarter pretty much every game. But nevertheless, it was a very creditable performance by St Kilda, and the structure they had with Riewoldt playing up the ground like the good old days, Molly, it took you back in time. Is Riewoldt, I mean, we know he's got chronic knee problems. Can he actually keep this up over the rest of the season, or is it just a one-off thing for him?
I think it's a bit of a worry. I mean, he's not going to do 150 each week. That's plain and simple. He's, as you've sort of said, he's had four games of 90 plus and one of 80 plus in Dream Team and sort of similar values comparatively in Supercoach. I don't think he's going to be able to hold that up. I mean, he's played the Gold Coast, he's played the GWS, Richmond he got onto, and Sydney, who, as good as they've been, have been known to give away points to tall forwards. So, you know, they've got a couple of tough games, then the Crows and Bulldogs, which, you know, is a bit down. So they've got a pretty good draw still to come, even though they haven't played a lot of the top sides apart from Essendon and, to a lesser degree, Richmond and Sydney. So I guess they have played three of the top sides. So, you know, I think he could continue to average 100, which would be great in Dream Team for a forward. And he's probably right there just before his price gets up to about where his average would expect. So you're getting him probably not at a bargain, but probably about his right price right about today. So, right. You know, that could be something you like, or maybe you want to wait until after he's played Collingwood and the Blues and then pick him up after that.
So if you'd picked him up at the start of the season to take advantage of his soft draw, which, I mean, you wouldn't have thought would have included Sydney, but if you'd held on to him this long, you know, happy days. Do you hold on to him all the way through to the bye? Is he a keeper?
Oh, I would say yes. I would say, you know, he's got a good chance to perform well against both Carlton and Collingwood. But you would think that maybe the midfield won't perform as well against those sides, and that could bring down his scores a little bit.
Yep.
But absolutely, he could get through averaging just about 100 all the way through to the bye.
All right, and also at St Kilda, Tom Lee is on the bubble this week, but I think we can pretty much bypass him, can't we?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't have thought there was a lot of value in him.
No. All right. And just to round out the talk of that game, of course, which was the first game played outside Australia for premiership points. Again, those who picked up Mumford, hoping that his early draw might have been might have given a bump to his value, have been sorely disappointed. For those who are still hanging on to Mumford, and I notice his ownership is still at about just below 8% in Supercoach. He does seem to be a bit of a Supercoach special. Of course, we know that even though it's not quite as pronounced in previous years, the Sydney effect in Supercoach, which of course, for those who don't know, is the tendency of Sydney to depress the Supercoach scores of the opposition, and thus every player who's on Sydney does tend to get a bit of a boost for the same sort of performance, because the opposition does tend to, you know, to have a fairly low disposal efficiency, and that has been shown in previous years to give a bit of a boost to Sydney players. Nevertheless, with Mumford, the problem, Molly, seems to be with Mike Pike. It is a classic ruck by committee, a bit like the running backs by committee in the NFL, and that has hurt Mumford's price to the extent where he's pretty much no longer a premium, is he?
No, he's not at the moment, and that's a worry. I think it's sort of the rise of that second ruck, where he used to do most of the rucking on his own. Pike's come on and done well, which in a way actually probably gives interest to what's going to happen when Tippett comes in, which is still a long way away. So perhaps, you know, there will be some, you know, amount of bargain to be earned from Mumford later in the season when Tippett comes in, if he comes in, and especially if he comes in for Pike, that, you know, that may affect how much rucking Mumford does and therefore send his price up.
They really haven't been getting much out of their third tall forward. I mean, Everett's been the man in, with a bit of Mitch Morton. So I can't see why they couldn't play Pike in that third forward role. I mean, even if they, or even just had Pike and Tippett and have Mumford as the third tall forward, well, that'd be very hard to combat.
Yeah, well, that's what I was just sort of thinking myself. Is you know, would it make sense to actually, you know, as much promises we all see out of Reed, you know, the promise and the delivery are at opposite ends of the scale, and perhaps what needs to be happened is that Tippett will come in for Reed instead.
Yep. All right, onto the Fremantle and Richmond game. Now, you talk about the carnage in the backs. That is what the topic on the lips of every Dream Team and Supercoach coach this week. But if you have Nathan Fyfe in the forwards, you're also staring down the barrel of a possible donut, because he is going to be missing for 2 weeks after losing his case at the tribunal, Molly. So, I mean, I'm hearing, we'll obviously talk about Bryce Gibbs later on, but if you had the option to go down and then move money, I mean, I'm seeing some coaches saying, well, this is an opportunity to move money from one position to another. Maybe I want to go more in the, you know, I like Mays, for instance, and I want to go down to someone like that, or Paperone, who we'll talk about in a minute. I want to move the money out of the forwards and into something, into somewhere else. Whereas if you do that, and you did like five to start off with, that might not mean that you actually get five back in. So I feel like with players like Fife, coaches are sort of being a bit blithe in terms of getting rid of them. But maybe if you don't hold on to them for those 2 weeks, you'll never be able to be in a position to get them back in. I don't know whether that's actually an issue or not, but do you think those with Fife who also have issues in the back line should just concentrate on the back line and minimising donuts at this stage, or is Fife a more pressing issue?
Yeah, I think you can kill two birds with one stone, because as pointed out by Tilt Rose in the chat, Fife is actually classed as a midfielder this year.
That's true.
So
I always get caught by that one, yeah.
Yeah, it's easy to because he still does play forward a lot, and he's made a little bit of money on the starting price, but he's right at about even along all the three indicators, his average, his implied, and his break even. So, you know, he's at the middle point of the roller coaster now, going along the flat. So, yeah, you could easily do something like with the fact that Gibbs is out, and Brett Goods is out, who most people have, and both of those guys, I think I'm right in saying, have back mid eligibility. You could actually get Fife out this week to another back mid, and hide away one of those potential donut in the back line. If you've got a few of the guys, you know, you might have the Port, some of the, you know, Pittard or one of those guys who looks like they'll miss out this week as well. You could easily hide away one of those zeros in your midfield by bringing in a back midfielder for Fife. So you've killed two birds with one stone with that, and then playing one of your rookie midfielders who, you know, you may have had on the bench and are still playing.
No, so just to set that out for, I mean, because we're going to be talking a lot about this week, about the carnage in the back. So we'll do a list, Molly, before we go any further, of all the possible outs. So Gibbs is already confirmed out. Goods is out for 2 weeks now with suspension. Luke Brown, I would presume, is out with an injury which he was subbed off with last week. Heath was injured in the Port game. Pittard is already confirmed, pretty much almost confirmed out this week with the injury that also he had the late withdrawal from, which I believe was a quad, which I presume means Stevenson survives, but you can't trust these things, I suppose. Who else am I forgetting in the back lines, Molly? That might be it, hopefully.
That might be it.
Hopefully, but that's, I mean, enough, isn't it?
Exactly.
They're all extremely popular players. So
players, yes. that's what I was going to say. Mm. They're all definitely guys who a lot of you, I mean, Goods especially, Gibbs was extremely popular.
Mm.
So, you know, these are guys who most people are going to have. Just checking out some of their popularity, and I mean, Goods is in 70% of sides. Wow, yep. I didn't know that. That's, you know, unheard of.
Yep.
You know, even a lot of players, and Gibbs 50%. So, you know, half the competition has at least two zeros in their side.
Hanley, right, another one heavy.
Hanley, yes. Yep. Yeah,
so he was a late out last week, and
no, he was suspended last week. I've been told that he also had an injury. So
that's correct. Yes,
you know, he's in 8% of sides or 10% of Supercoach sides. So, you know, these are all guys who you may not have already accounted for, and may need to do some creative trading and manipulation to cover them this week.
Yep. All right. So we shall. Well, I suppose we should also mention Paul Duffield in that conversation, Molly. So he was he laid out? He was an out anyway last week. So he's another one who, if he misses this week, do you cut your losses with Duffield and run?
Well, I mean, he's at about the midpoint, but yeah, if he's not playing this week and you're going to face a donut, and you weren't going to miss out on anyone else, you definitely think about covering that donut by, you know, side trading or down trading or up trading, any sort of trade for Duffield.
Mm. All right, and on the Richmond side of that game, Molly, now, I don't know whether you were watching the chat late in that game on Fan Footy and pretty much on Twitter and everywhere else that people were discussing Supercoach especially, but the discrepancies and the weirdness of some of those Supercoach scores from that game, Molly, caused a bit of consternation, shall we say, a bit of controversy. So I suppose we need to weigh in on that. I tweeted out, and I other people tweeted out, obviously, the relevant statistics for Trent Cotchin, who I believe had 9 possessions, of which 5 were contested, and including 3 inside 50s and 1 goal assist, and all of that added up to 80 Supercoach points, and I'm not quite sure why that was. I believe more the fact that Hayden Ballantyne had 2 possessions and a goal and scored 40 Supercoach points, because of course that goal was in the last minute or so and won the game for Fremantle. That is a more believable and, well, if not justifiable, then historically, you know, consistent score in Supercoach. But yeah, I'm not quite sure why Cotchin got that big loading on his stats late in the fourth quarter, Molly. I mean, we don't talk a lot about the eternal Dream Team versus Supercoach discussion on this show, but I suppose this is probably a bit of an edge case. You don't normally see this huge amount of discrepancy. What does this tell you about the relative worth of Supercoach versus Dream Team?
I guess I'm always been someone who prefers the cut and dry of Dream Team to the hocus pocus, if you like, of the Supercoach scoring. So, you know, I think it's every man to himself. I know a lot of people who feel the fact that Supercoach is more sort of towards realistic, you know, getting value for good things done and penalising, you know, not just free kicks but also clangers and the likes is desirable to, you know, get a side of the best players.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think the reason why the loading was so high on those positions, I mean, they were 100% at 100% efficiency, but I could probably give you another half dozen examples of similar stat lines that were not similarly rewarded in other games with pretty much the same stat line or even better that didn't get that sort of loading. But I suspect that the reason for that one was because of the pressure stat. This is something that they've added in the last year or two, and I have to say I don't quite. I mean, I'm all for most of the Supercoach loadings and even the late Q4 loadings when you win the game. I'm fine with that as long as everyone knows those are the rules. As long as everyone knows that Hayden Ballantyne's going to score an extra 30 points for a kick just because he wins the game with it, fine. But I think the pressure loading stat can be a bit misleading and too subjective, I think, at times. And I think, apart from anything else, I think, again, it's one of those stats that favours midfielders too much, because I think the midfielders are already favoured too much by the stats in all of these fantasy games. And I feel like if you're going to do a pressure stat, do a pressure stat on... on Jack Hanneth. Give Jack Hanneth a pressure stat for the pressure of going up for that mark on the halfback flank. Give him 60 Supercoach points for that mark, you know. That's the sort of thing I'd like to see rewarded. Defensive efforts that are pressured as well as offensive efforts that are pressured. But that's just my 2 cents on that one. I'm sure that's something that they all talk about, and they probably do give loadings for it, but for whatever reason, the numbers just looked a bit silly in retrospect on that game. Anyway... back to individual player discussions from that game, Molly. Nick Vlaston, he looked like $1 million in the first half, but he stopped. It was as if he'd been subbed off pretty much in that second half. He scored virtually nothing, even though he wasn't actually subbed off. Does this tell you anything about his tank? Is he the new Dustin Martin? Do we need to worry about him actually getting subbed off because he goes missing in the second half of games?
I mean, it's always a worry that fact that if they go missing in the second half. But then again, you know, first game, pressure game, it could have just been, you know, not used to it, didn't pace himself right. Same thing happened to Bradley Hill in his first game this year, although I think there was a little bit of a knock on his leg at the same time for that one. But, you know, I think he'll be okay. You know, he's got great reps. He's been waiting for his chance to come in and, you know, didn't do a lot wrong that I saw. But, you know, 11 touches, 3 marks and, you know, 4 tackles, that's pretty good.
Mm. For a half's work, yes.
For a half's work, that's exactly right. If he can put it together for a whole game, you know, he'll be set. So, you know, we got another week to look at him before we before his price changes. He's already a very popular player in 20% of dream teams and nearly 30% of super coaches. For a guy playing his first game, that seems a bit surprising to me, especially when he didn't play that first game until round 5. So, you know, one to watch. We're going to have some guys, hopefully, in a way, in the back line who are going to be at the top of the roller coaster from being rookies. So, you know, him coming in would be a nice little, you know, earn of if he can have a good game this week and sort of cement himself in that side.
Yep. And I was mentioned, I think it was Heavy in the chat, you know, said, oh, well, in reference to the previous discussion, it just depends who champion data people have in their teams. That is something which I do hear a small number of coaches saying that, you know, it makes them suspect whether the champion data callers have a certain player in their dream team or their super coach team. In answer to that, I would say, I'm not sure there's actually much media done about this, but the job of a champion data caller is very, very complex. And it's one where it's almost impossible actually to quote unquote cheat or to favour your own player, because it's so complex the jobs that those callers do that they haven't got time to scratch themselves. They haven't got time to think about who the player is even. They don't. I've heard stories of by those callers told to me where they don't even know what the score is or who's winning when they look up after watching the game on the TV and actually calling it for the purposes of champion data. I think it's a bit disrespectful towards the hard work that those champion data callers put in to say that they could actually do that. That's just my my editorial on that one.
You would hope that the factors that go into the multiplier at the end of the game are stat based, even if they are somewhat subjective. So. Yep. That, you know, you can't game them in that way.
No,
I agree. I echo your thoughts that, you know, these guys are professionals and you know, it's okay to joke that, you know, it's who they got on their side. But in reality, you know, it would probably, you know, cost champion data a lot more if that was actually the case because, you know.
Yeah, they make a lot of money out of those exotic stats and if they were bogus, they wouldn't. The clubs wouldn't pay for them. You know, they'd pay their own people who could be objective about it. So yeah, I mean that's why they are the professionals. So anyway, we'll move on to the Western Sydney Gold Coast game, the battle for the spoon, Molly, or is it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I noticed spoon betting was
suspended.
Yeah, in a couple of areas this week.
I did hear someone. Not that we like to advertise the game here, but some bookmakers were actually not betting on the spoon this year, but were betting on the team with the most losses to get away from any problems with teams maybe running foul of certain organisations or AFL penalties.
Indeed. Anyway. So we need to go back and do our weekly or bi-weekly double Lockie update, Molly. Now, as far as Lachlan Plowman goes, he came in back into the side this week and delivered what you would call an average rookie score of 50s. That's what you expect out of an average rookie price player is 50 to 60 some every week. If you got that, then that's about the median of all rookies. So. But I suppose the issue with Western Sydney is that Phil Davis has gone down with a long-term injury of 6 to 8 weeks. So Brent Thornton looked pretty poor as a tall defender, but they're going to have to play him. And, of course, Tim Moore, who's in pretty poor form as well in terms of his defensive abilities. He's getting the ball a bit. But the question arises, Molly, is who they're actually going to play as third tall, and does that mean that they actually play Lachlan Plowman as the third tall, because he is over 190 centimetres. Theoretically, he is a tall defender, although he doesn't really play like one. He's one of those players who is probably listed as a key defender, but probably plays like a general defender in the champion data classification. So my feeling is that they'll probably bring in someone like Aiden Corr or Frost. Was it Sam Frost, I believe, who... because Jack Frost plays for Collingwood, doesn't he? I don't want to get those Frosts mixed up. So the giant Frost is another candidate to come back in there. So I presume that will be the structure. So what do you think this means for Plowman's job security? Is it not affected because he doesn't play that role, or do you think he's going to be covering for Davis over the next 6 to 8 weeks?
I don't think it's going to hurt his job security, but I'm not sure that it's going to help it greatly. I mean, the other guy who they have around is Stephen Gillam. So, you know, he got dropped this week and, you know, I haven't heard how he went in the Sydney competition or the Northern competition.
That's right.
Yep. So he could come back in. But, yeah, Plowman's job security is a little bit better, but he's sort of at the top of the roller coaster now anyway. So unless you have – if you've got him and are considering this week whether to hold on to him or not, you know, it's going to depend on what – you know, whether he gets a game, whether you've got other guys who you're going to have to move around to cover for the zero and therefore can't afford to trade out a guy who's actually going to play, assuming he is – and, you know, if you do have to hold on to him, he should make his break even this week, although next week could be a different story.
Yep. And the other Lockie, of course, Lachlan Whitfield, Molly. I just have this sneaking suspicion he's going to get rested this week. I think given that he's supposed to be only playing half the games, they might have said, right, we'll get you to the Gold Coast game and then you can have a rest against Essendon, because I believe that's an away game against Essendon. They might leave him at home for that one. So I'm already seeing some coaches trading him out. Do you think this is actually the week to get rid of him?
You know, that is a worry if he gets rested, but, yeah, I would trade him at the last resort. He's... You know, he's been a bit up and down, but that's the sort of way these rookies are going to play. But he's been, you know, he hasn't had a real shocker of a game. You know, 36 isn't good, but for a rookie, that's okay. He's still, you know, he's still got a very low break even and has the potential to reel off 100, although, you know, maybe not against Essendon. So, you know, I wouldn't... He'd be on the bottom end of my, you know, trade options this week.
All right. Now, I'm seeing, as far as the Gold Coast side, I'm seeing comparisons made between, if you're looking to go sideways from Gibbs, for instance, or maybe going up a little bit from Brett Goods this week, I'm seeing actually Charlie Dixon being talked of in the realms of the top 10 backs. Now, he's been scoring like that. What's that? 3 scores, 98 or above out of the 5, and the other 2 in the 60s. So he does have a bit of an up-and-down scoring record. But, I mean, we talked last week about the prospect of Sam Day going to the back line. And, of course, Blue McKenna is obviously a listener to the show, Molly, because he followed my advice to the letter, and Sam Day went into defence, and that seemed to work. Because not only did that allow Dixon to play the role he has been playing all season to great effect, but it also allowed Zach Smith to go forward a fair bit and score 3 goals and turn into a fantasy premium. So, I mean, that seems like a genius move from Blue McKenna to put Sam Day into the back line, and that has turned, at least in that game against GWS, now, of course, this is just GWS they're playing, Are the numbers that Dixon and Smith delivered in that game, how close are they to where they get for the rest of the season, Molly? And do you think that Sam Day move to the back line is going to be the making of those two as fantasy almost premiums?
It could be. I mean, Dixon's had a pretty good year, especially in Supercoach, where he's averaging 115 on the season, up nearly 18 points on his implied price at the moment. So I think he'll be a little bit up and down, but as a back, most are. And the fact that he has knocked off 2 110 or better scores, and you know, you could say that this week's 119 was against GWS, but the 110 was against Sydney. So unless he likes playing New South Wales sides, and that's the reason for his high scores, you would think that he can play pretty well this year, and unless coaches start to drill down on him, that he'll be a little bit up and down, but can score and hit the hundreds.
All right, we shall move on to the Carlton and Adelaide game, Molly. I've got a massive amount of Carlton players to talk about here, but we're going to talk about them all at once, or a lot of them all at once. Of course, we have to talk about Bryce Gibbs and his subbing off this week, which, of course, was I was a bit sceptical about at first, but apparently it was due to injury. He did actually have a hamstring injury. It's a one-week hamstring. Now, I'm not sure. Do they actually have one-week hamstrings? Is that a thing? I thought they were all 3 weeks minimum. Surely, well, you know, we can't believe anything Mick Malthouse says at the best of times, but a one-week hamstring, come on.
Yeah, unless it's a preventative thing where there's no obvious sign of injury, but because of the way he's describing it or running or something like that, they're holding him out for a week just to make sure.
Mm. Well, especially for Dream Team in the age of free trades, then I think it's pretty much a given that you'd have to trade him out this week. And, of course, if you are looking for a sideways trade, make a little bit of money and also to get the maximum bang for your buck, you need look no further than the other side of the Carlton backline, where Heath Scotland is about to come into a massively favourable draw for Carlton going up to the bye, Molly. And this is why I have such a large amount of Blues to talk about today, because you read off the list of clubs that Carlton is going to play up to the bye: Melbourne, St Kilda, Port, Brisbane, GWS, Essendon and Hawthorne. So Essendon and Hawthorn will be during the bye period. So if you want to be going sideways during that period, then that will be the time to do it. So, I mean, Heath Scotland is the sort of player who you might not think can last all season, but at least up until the byes, he looks like a pretty good prospect to me. And he is currently priced at 95.7 in Dream Team, 103 in Supercoach. I think he can outperform those numbers fairly comfortably against those teams, because he is the sort of player who will rack it up and get lots of junk points against those sort of teams, Molly.
Yeah, no, I agree. He's been a quality Dream Teamer for a long time now. A bit of a slow start coming off, a slow start to the year because of suspension, club-based suspension. So, yeah, he can definitely – he's sort of ready to explode, I would think. He should get close to averaging, you know, high 90s to low 100s.
Yeah, I haven't got Hamish Hartlett on the running sheet this week because, I mean, if you're looking to go to someone, I feel like Hartlett is the buy high candidate, whereas Scotland is the buy low. I mean, I think that's a pretty much a no-brainer. I wouldn't be going for Hartlett because his price is almost topped out. I think Scotland's and his scoring is probably on the way down, whereas I think Scotland is got a lot more upside in his price over the next 4 to 6 weeks. Now, also at Carlton, now I've got a list of midfielders here who want you to rate if you want to take advantage of this excellent draw that Carlton has got. I'm speaking here of Brock McLean, Andrew Carazzo, Cade Simpson and Mark Murphy. Which of those four, if you want to trade in one of those to get maximum bang for your buck, would you be getting in at this stage?
If you wanted it, I mean, if you wanted it to, you know, potentially make money or the likes, you know, you'd have to strongly consider McLean. But for me personally, you know, I think Murphy is come off a little bit of a slow start to the year. Well, actually, he hasn't. I thought he had, but no. He's averaged. He's had 400s already and an 84. So I think he's just money in the bank and should be strongly considered when that comes up.
Yeah, I've had Murphy in both competitions all year, and he's been slightly disappointing. I mean, it would have been better to actually have his teammate Lucas, because he might not have scored quite as many points, but he was much cheaper than Lucas. I mean, the thinking with Mark Murphy was that he was slightly underpriced because of his injury-interrupted season last season, but Murphy hasn't hugely outperformed his underpriced value from the start of the year. So he's still, there's still upside, I suppose, in his numbers. But, I mean, I can certainly see Carrazzo and Simpson getting big games, you know, putting in a 130 or 140 or multiples, you know, 115 pluses in that run. And obviously Brock and Clean, I was saying the praises of last year. So, I mean, any of those players could be the one to break out, or maybe they all could. So it could just be a party down there. And speaking of Kane, Lucas Molly, just to bring him up again. Now, for those of us who've had him from the start, I have had in Supercoach. I managed to keep him, even though I traded him out to Maloney in Dream Team. He's gained a fair bit of coin, 72 in Dream Team and 98 in Supercoach. But arguably, he's still a little bit underpriced if you think that he can be one of the ones who you know, lifts his game, as a lot of mid-priced players do, against the likes of Melbourne and St Kilda and Brisbane and GWS, who he's got over the next 5 weeks. Is he the one who, you know, outperforms his price even better than those four I previously mentioned? And still, he would actually still be good value now?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he will be the one who outperforms their original price by the most. But I think that if you haven't got him now, you've lost most of the value out of his price rises this year. You might have a little bit more, but you couldn't see it getting too high.
Mm-hmm. All right, speaking of value, on the Adelaide side, I'm seeing a lot of coaches talking about Rory Laird this week. I don't think people would have expected to be talking about him when, of course, he got the green vest in that game. But, of course, he came on fairly early and scored an 81 in Dream Team and 69 in Supercoach. 17 possessions and 6 tackles. I'm not sure that's quite sustainable, but I see risk written all over Rory Laird, Molly. I mean, given that a lot of people are going to be having to start Laird because they've got Gibbs, Goods, Pittard, Brown, you know, they've got four players and they're going to have to be trading to avoid donuts. They're going to be playing Laird this week, if not the week after. I think he's still a subs candidate. I would not want to be having to start him. It's a bit of a worry, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it is that, but he had a pretty full game last week. So, you know, I was just trying to work out whether, you know, maybe he'd lose the sub option because, you know, he'd had the sub last week that this week, you know, they'd want to give him a full game, but, you know, had a pretty long game anyway. So, you know, it's going to be a risk picking him up as the highest of the defenders, pretty much. Yeah, that's going to be tough. But I think, you know, it could be a risk worth taking. And, you know, he's got a negative 54 break even. So even if he, you know, doesn't perform well, he's likely to, you know, go up in price quite a bit in the next week or two.
It was asked in the chat by Tiltraise whether he was vested in the first game where he scored a 30-odd. No, he wasn't, but that was the game against the Bulldogs, which was very wet, and scoring was down as a consequence, so maybe we can give him a pass mark on that one. I still think, I mean, some teams do like to give the vest to the same player every week. I know Richmond gave it to Ellis 4 weeks in a row, the red and then 3 greens. I think Savage has been the vest almost every week for Hawthorn when he's played, Molly. You can vouch for that, can't you? Certainly his scoring has suggested that. He's been averaging 30. I think he's had a fair few vests, if not all vests, in the four games he's played. So just because a player got the vest last week doesn't mean they won't also get it this week, depending on the team philosophy, I suppose.
True.
Another player who might get the vest this week is Sam Kerridge. He is also on the bubble. He has been used in tagging roles, and he has not been scoring all that well. Well, he certainly didn't score well this week. He was tagging Gibbs until half time, when Gibbs, of course, was subbed, and then he moved on to various other roles, including Judd. He did score a 79 and a 70 in the first game against the Bulldogs when I believe he was tagging Griffin, was it? Or Boyd? Let me look at that. He was tagging Griffin, that's right. So, 7 tackles in both of the games, Molly. 7 tackles. So, 14 tackles across 2 games for a sub, for a rookie, I should say. Now, he is a tagger, so you would presume that he is going to be laying a lot of tackles, but is that sustainable? I'm not sure it is.
It could be okay. I mean, he's the worry being that his first game was his big game, and so that will go straight off his price now. And centre forward, not sure that they're going to, as we've sort of been talking about, going to be where it's at this week, unless you're going to do some switches around to try and get some more players in your back line. So I think he's going to fall into problems in that area where, you know, players just need to do other things to fill out their side this week.
Mm. Just to round out the Adelaide talk, of course, Taylor Walker has gone down for the season with a knee injury, which means, of course, now Tom Lynch was brought in last week, even before Walker got injured, and he's been scoring like we know he can if he actually plays. Now, of course, his job security with Walker in the side does look fairly good. But I believe they're going to bring in Henderson from Henderson played this
McKernan.
Week. So McKernan, that's the other one. I knew it ended in on. McKernan will be the one they'll bring in. So the McKernan is not the most mobile of players, Molly. So it does look like Jenkins and McKernan are going to be the stay-at-home forwards with Henderson rotating in there, I suppose. Henderson's fairly mobile, but I think Lynch is going to be the one, a bit similar to St Kilda, I suppose, where Kaczynski and Lee aren't all that mobile. Similarly, obviously, with these Adelaide players, Jenkins and McKernan. And, I mean, Lynch could start scoring like Riewoldt. That is the structure. But it's a matter of whether Lynch can actually keep that up. You know, he's had 2 good games playing that role. Is that the way it's going to work out for the Adelaide forward line for the rest of the year with no Walker?
I guess it's up in the air, but you know, you'd think they're going to have to play a little bit like that to see if it doesn't help things out.
Mm. On the Bulldogs side, obviously we all talked about Brett Goods, and he's pretty much a definite trade out, I would have thought, especially if you were looking, staring at a donut at this stage. Because, of course, you can bring him back in Dream Team, perhaps not in Supercoach, but you might be able to justify bringing him out and coming back in a couple of weeks. But as far as the 2 rookies who are on the bubble this week, Molly, Stringer it was who got the sub in the first game and McRae in the second, which, for me, rules them out of contention, surely. I mean, the fact that both of them had sub games, which has slowed down their price increase, and also the fact that they are sub eligible in that structure, tells me that they're not going to be earning a whole lot of money. And given that they've already got the price premium on them to start with because they're high draft picks, all these things tell me that I can safely ignore these guys.
Yeah, they're not setting the world on fire, and you know, there's a worry with the Dogs as well, that although they have played well so far, that, you know, they've got some tough opponents still to come. Although they've got the Gold Coast in 3 weeks and Port, who have been performing pretty well.
Yep.
Before the bye, so, you know, there's a chance for him to have a dip at it, but you'd think that there's going to be better options around than these guys this week.
All right, and on the Geelong side of that game, the Bulldogs versus Geelong game, I'm seeing a lot of fantasy coaches this week saying, right, I have to get Steve Johnson in, as a lot of coaches do tend to do. They see a massive score like that and say, right, I have to get that guy in. I don't want to miss the next one of those. And you look at Stevie Johnson's scores, and certainly he's not been letting anyone down and not really been starting all that slowly. 92, 107, 141 in Dream Team, and a similar story in Supercoach. But I also want to throw another name from the Geelong forward line. We talked about Matthew Stokes a week or two ago, Molly, but Stephen Motlop has also been increasing in price, and his break-even is still in the 50s. He's priced at 373 in Dream Team after going up 71 and priced at 401 in Supercoach after going up 72. So he's still on the upward slope of the roller coaster, but he's still got a fair way to go as well. And Geelong's draw, so they've got Richmond, Essendon, Collingwood, Port, Gold Coast and GWS before the bye. That's a pretty good trip leading up to the bye, especially. I'm not sure we have to make a decision between these two, Johnson and Motlop, but, I mean, if you can't quite reach Johnson, is Motlop a good second fiddle?
I would probably wait myself, but, yeah, he's outperforming his price implied average, so there's still some value there in him, but you've missed out on the boat to some degree, and I think you'd be better off waiting for Johnson or someone like that.
All right, speaking of missing the boat, Molly, on the Port Adelaide West Coast game, I missed the boat entirely, as many other coaches would have. I'm not sure whether you have, but I was glad not to be on the Hoff boat this week, because he looked terrible. He hit the wall. All those things, I should have given him the wall, shouldn't I? But he certainly has delivered a fairly non-startable score. Where is his numbers? I'll have to look all the way down to... Oh, there it is, 45 and 53 in that game. Yeah. Was comprehensively beaten by Mitchell Brown. And is this now the time to stop the Hoff train, get off the Hoff wagon, just get the tickets off the Hoff train?
Hoff.
Yes. Is it time to rack Hoff?
I think it is, yeah. It's hard to say. I mean, you have to understand that we do this and a lot of the times we're going to be proven wrong. And, you know, I think when we said it was a bit of a flash in the pan, we were wrong. But, you know, I think in making the right decision, you know, I think it's time to cut your – is to check in your chips on him and go to someone who's a bit more consistent and who you'd have a little bit more faith that he can do it week in, week out, whereas the Hoff has done very well so far, but who knows how it's going to end up.
I believe it's actually possible to go straight from the Hoff to Buddy. Let me look at that. Well, speaking of people who never let you down.
Yes.
Yes. So, yes, West Hoff is 515 in Dream Team and Franklin is 489, so you're actually making a little bit of money there. You're making about 13 grand in Supercoach. So would you advise that trade?
I guess coming up against Adelaide, a bit of a weakened Adelaide, maybe it is time to think of Buddy if you don't have him.
But then again, we thought that about North, didn't we? Because, of course, well, Buddy did kick 13 last year against them.
Yes, we did. So, yeah, I mean, it's horses for courses on that one.
Yes. Also at Port, now, of course, as we mentioned before, so Pittard out with a calf last week, and I was one of those suckers, Molly, who got sucked in by the... I'm not sure we can blame the fact that Dream Team hasn't got rolling lockout like Supercoach does, because I think I even would have got sucked in by this even if we had the Supercoach-style lockout, because... as the implementation of the Supercoach rolling lockout means you can't reverse trades after the first lockout. So I would have got sucked in by this one anyway. But I was one of those mini coaches who actually had a choice between trading out Pittard or Stevenson and traded out Stevenson. And, of course, it was Stevenson who came back in for Pittard. It was Pittard who eventually got the injury that we weren't told about. So I'm not sure we can blame anyone apart from Ken Hinckley. But the upshot of this is, Molly, it is actually valid, even though it sounds stupid, even though we made the wrong choice last week, to actually go Pittard to Stevenson this week. Is that a bad choice? Or, I mean, we're missing out. It's basically fixing a bad trade from last week, and we miss out on the 30 grand that Stevenson would have made in Dream Team. Is that a weird idea, or is that actually the right thing to do now?
No, I don't think I would like to see that done. I think you'd be better off taking a running shot at Vasluin instead from Richmond. So, or trying to get an upgrade instead. You know, you're going to pay extra to get Stevenson, and he has got a minus 12 break even. But you know, it's gonna, you know, yeah. No, I wouldn't be doing it.
All right. I mean, people have been saying, well, you're going to be trading out Brett Goods this week. But then in 2 weeks, you look at him and you look, he's still got a break even similar. He's in a similar situation to Stevenson. Are you going to get Brett Goods back in, or are you going to go for a rookie then? Is the question different with Stevenson than with Goods?
Yeah, I think Goods could be a low end keeper. So, you know, he's off the top of my head, his scores have been pretty good so far. So, you know, you could have him at the lower end of your as the D6 or as a good bench player to have as security. But yeah, I personally would like to just try and hide him away somewhere in the side for the 2 weeks, because it's not like an injury where you don't know how he's going to come back. He's had issue. He had the suspension, so he'll come back and play pretty good, you'd think.
So just to compare the numbers, Stevenson averaging 67 in Dream Team and 72 in Supercoach. Goods averaging just on 80 in Dream Team and 94 in Supercoach, but he costs an extra 50 grand in Dream Team and 80 grand in Supercoach. So you're paying a bit extra, but you're getting, as you say, a low-end keeper, so I'd agree with that analysis. Campbell Heath, another one who was injured late in the game, so if he misses this week, is he one for the chop? So you look at his break-even, he's still minus 6 in Dream Team, 28 in Supercoach, so he might be a little bit more for the chop there. So is he another one who you want to keep on, hold on to if you're not eating a donut?
Yeah, I haven't seen his injury concern, how bad it is, but if it only looks like a week or so in Dream Team, I try and hang on to him. Supercoach, yeah, he's on the chopping block. Mm.
And I suppose on the West Coast side, we need to... Now, I'm not sure there's a huge amount of coaches in this situation, but it's less than 3%. But for those 2.8% of Dream Team coaches and 2.5% of Supercoach coaches who do have Matt Prentice in their side this week, Molly, now, he has that 4 in Dream Team and 5 in Supercoach rotating through his price for 2 weeks. Even if he plays this week against the Dogs and then next week against the Lions... I'm assuming he's not going to be scoring 150s. He'd have to do that pretty much. He'd have to be scoring 170s, 200s, to be not dropping in price. Would you this is a really fraught question for me if I had him, because those opponents are pretty good opponents, the Dogs and the Lions. But can you take the chance that he's going to underperform against those guys, and then you'd be left with a guy who's, you know, who you've lost 100 grand on or 150 grand on, or do you need to trade him out this week just to avoid it?
Yeah, I mean, I would be trading him out if he's playing and looking for other options, and there's a lot out there. So, you know, he's, especially in Supercoach where he's got a 200 break even, I think, you know, this is he's a sell if you haven't got him, and a watch if you haven't got him, because... You know, that score of 4 or 5 in Supercoach is going to drop off his averages. So that should bring him to the bottom of the roller coaster, and then we can jump on him to get up a little bit from there.
Yep. On the Brisbane-Melbourne game on the Sunday, Molly, Dane Zorko, Brent Maloney, I feel like players, coaches are... treading water on these guys because of that carnage in the backs we've been talking about all show. I feel like those who have Maloney, even though they might have been planning to get him out this week, we can keep him in the side for another week or two because we've got, you know, spot fires elsewhere to deal with. And similarly with Zorko, you might have been planning to bring him in this week, but because of the issues with the back line, you might decide to wait a bit because you're not quite... you know, hopeful that this is the breakout game where Zorko becomes Zorko again. He did score big tons in both competitions, but that's his by far his best best score of the year in both competitions. And he does have Sydney this week, who he'll probably get sat on by someone like Nick Smith. So he probably won't be scoring anywhere near what he did against Melbourne. So I feel like a lot of coaches will be making the decision to sort of hold out Zorko and hold in Maloney. So do you think that's going to be the right decision there?
It could be. Now, the interesting thing, I'm not sure that it's you or someone else, someone tweeted out, or I can't even remember where I saw it, but someone pointed out that Zorko actually scored much better against the top eight sides last year than he did against the bottom eight sides last year. You might have to double check that. It's probably helped by the fact I'm looking here at the his DT average versus Sydney is 140 from one game. So that's going to help you.
Yes.
He's got a positive against West Coast and Carlton and didn't play against Essendon last year. So, yeah, I think both these guys you could hold on to if you've got them. The damage is already done with Zorko. He's got a very makeable break even this week.
I guess, the question with Zorko is whether you bring him in or not. Now is the question, the time to bring him in.
Well, it's not the worst move. I'm a bit sceptical on him myself, but then again, I was not last year, but I didn't think he was going to continue on the way he did. So, you know, he's proved a lot of us wrong in the past. So if you can have him as, I think he's got forward eligibility. If you have him as a forward, then you're going to be doing okay.
Yeah. Also, on the Brisbane side, Sam Mays, he has earned a starting role in thousands and thousands of Dream Team and Supercoach sides, surely, Molly. He is startable over pretty much every other option at this stage.
Amazing he was. Mm. Yeah, so, yeah, he's going to be one of those guys we pick up and put in on our starting field most weeks and just ride it out. You're going to have some bad games and good games, but, you know, he's going to stay in that forward six to forward seven spot for a long time, I think, into the season.
It's going to be interesting to see given how productive he was and the week before as well, about how long it'll take before teams will actually key on him. I mean, I found it interesting that Jordy McKenzie actually went to tag Buick at the start of this game. I've rated Buick at the start of this season as highly enough that I actually had him in my Supercoach side. I got scared on that one and eventually traded him out after an early poor score, but he's actually been pretty good. I'm wondering whether they'll actually key on Mays as well in future weeks, but that's probably going to be, given they've got a few outside weapons in that team, they'll probably leave Mays to his own devices. But yes, the other youngster from, there's two actually youngsters from the Lions who are on the bubble this week, Molly. One of them, of course, is Marco Guns Paperone, who, of course, was a fairly highly rated junior and went reasonably late in the draft. There was mixed opinions on Paperone, whether he was actually any good from various draft watchers, but he certainly proven some doubters wrong, especially with his performance in the first game, where we got 71 in Dream Team and 64 in Supercoach against the Roos, who do have a fairly good cadre of defenders, so that was a pretty good performance in a losing side. Against Melbourne, 45 and 36, that's probably where his average is closer to over the course of his starting season, Molly.
Yeah, no, I think that's the case. And you know, a bit like we were talking about the risks for Laird, Paperone's got a nice break even, but whether his job security's there or he's probably a best candidate. So, that's things to be worried about.
And as far as Sam Doherty goes, he was only on in the last quarter for Billy Long of the Ruckman, which of course means that he missed out on the points fest against Melbourne, so he will be coming up against Sydney, as all the Brisbane Lions players will be this week. And so the decent numbers he put up in his first game, especially that 86 in the Supercoach, I'm still not convinced that he's anywhere near unseating Yo in that team, and I think with Hanley due to come back this team, he might not even get picked this week, so the decision might be made for us.
Yeah, and I mean, for those reasons, if you are needing to bring in a rookie back, you know, you're probably better off risking with Laird, who has a higher break-even this week, than you are risking with Doherty, who doesn't, and you know, I think, you know, it's going to be a bit of a toss of the coin, but I think Laird's probably better because he's got a little bit more runs on the board already. So even if his performances are bad from here on in, for a couple of games, you know, you're going to make some money and can get out of him.
Similarly, with Doherty, on the Melbourne side, Max Gawn also had a very good first week, of course, in that game against GWS, where he joined in the party in the fourth quarter with three goals. And he came back to the field a bit this week with 58 and 66 in the game against Brisbane. That's still actually not bad, especially for a player who is priced as he is at about what Curry and... who else am I thinking of? Were, you know, at the start of the season. For those who have managed to luck it into not having to eat a donut this week, or not having to scramble to avoid donuts in their back line, Blickavs to Gawn seems like a pretty easy case of making a bit of easy cash at this stage.
Yeah, no, that's definitely... And if you've got a trade to burn, that's not the worst trade in the world. He's someone they want to play more. He played okay. He's learning, and yeah, put him on your bench and, you know, probably forget about him, and
yep.
He'll be a potential backup ruckman for you.
Yep. And in the last game of the round, Molly, time for a quick Hawk talk. Bradley Hill. You have a good story to tell for those of... I'm not sure how many. I could probably look that up, actually, about how many actually kept him. 4.9% of Dream Teamers and 7.2% of Supercoach players held on to Bradley Hill all this time, and they were rewarded, as you were, by a very startable score. I suppose the question now, Molly, is you look at Hawthorn's draw and it's starting to open up. I mean, they've got Sydney in a couple of weeks, obviously. Adelaide this week with no Walker, they're a bit in disarray, I suppose. So you would expect Hawthorn to enjoy themselves against Adelaide to take some toll from the pummeling they got put through in the prelim final last year. They've got a bit of payback, the Hawks, I think, against Adelaide. So you would expect them to run right this week. So you look at their draw coming up to the bye. So Adelaide this week, Sydney then... the golden run of GWS, Gold Coast, and Melbourne going up to the bye.
Four-week bye, as I like to call it.
So are you hoping to keep Hill all the way to round 10?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I think so. I'm hoping that he scores that well, but, you know, if he doesn't, then we can move him on. I mean, I think he had a reasonable break even to average last week, and I did expect a little bit more for him, being that it is his second season. He played the games last year. So, you know, quite often these rookie-type players will pull out a score like that, and you know, to some degree it's a bit lucky that it was him who did that and not one of the other guys who I may have traded out earlier. So, but I still think that he's an important cog in the Hawthorn wheel, in that he's a pacey player, and perhaps even more so with Rioli going out.
The question has been asked, going back to Max Gawn, what about Sam Rowe to Max Gawn? I think Rowe's got a fair bit to go. His break-even's around about 20 in both competitions. He's coming up against Melbourne this week, and then Sydney, St Kilda the week after.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, Carlton got a great run coming up, so you expect him to keep on.
Yeah, so again, it all depends if this is a burner trade where you've got nothing else that's need doing. And as we said earlier, you know, half the competition, you know, has got the two guys who are going to be out this week. You know, even, you know, 7/10 of the competition has good. So, you know, in Dream Team, there's one of your trades you may have to do. So I wouldn't believe that you'd have a burner trade in the rucks. But if you do, then, you know, you can think about it. You may even think, if you started with Curry, of just bringing in Gawn to be a second option, you know, through the bye weeks and the likes.
Now, if you do have that luxury, then I suppose the other boys on the bubble this week in the rucks, of course, is Majak Dor from the other side of that game, the Hawthorn North Melbourne game. I suppose the good point to relate about Majak Dor's game, Molly, is that he was targeted a lot inside 50. I think it was 7 up till half time targets inside 50, yeah, which is massive for a such a young player, given especially that there was Petrie and there was Aaron Black, who was having a pretty good game as well in that game. So, He does draw the ball, Molly, but when he gets it, he was actually the difference between the two sides, I thought. And I think a lot of North fans seem to say that as well. If we hadn't actually had Manjack Dawe shooting for goal, we would have beaten Hawthorn. So is that a good sign or a bad sign that he's getting the ball and just, you know, and burning it so badly?
Yeah, but I think his first kick was okay last week, like the week before in round four. So, you know, I think he's going to be up and down a bit with his kicking. He moves at the ball well. He plays in the ruck a little bit. But you'd have to think his job security is risky when the coach, you know, made the point before he was selected that he wasn't pushing for selection, and it took an injury to Tarrant. And I'm not sure they've announced any how long Tarrant's going to be out. I think they've said he's probably going to miss again this week. But, you know, how long Majak can hold on to that spot is probably questionable.
And it was noticeable that Goldstein looks like he could do with a rest, and Curry coming back in, that might you know, mix up the tall timber stocks down there at North Melbourne, and just looking at, so Robbie Tarrant is listed as a test in the injury list this week. By the way, the injury lists are going to be posted on the Fan Footy forums in the fantasy news section this week. I've made a post for that, and also for the rookie elevations and the long term injury de-elevations, I suppose, from the major the club list this week. So, yes, many things happening in the world of football, Molly. It was a bit of big news week, and, yes, big news week for the websites and all sorts of things going on hither and thither. And I'm hoping that people will enjoy all of the new things and keep interest up in across the whole of the year. Obviously, that was the big issue last year, that people did tend to drop off after the buys, but hopefully the all of the new things that have been introduced to the industry, and all the new games you can play and all the options you have now, hopefully the people will still be here in another couple of months and even a month or two after that, still interested in fantasy football, as we will, because we will be going all the way through to round 23, of course.
Yes, I'm looking forward to getting to round 22 and not be saying, well, no one's got any trades left, so we might have some fun discussions at that point. Changing premiums and the like.
We might have shows that go more than 20 minutes, yeah.
As you mentioned earlier, that you love the feedback, so would that be in the feedback forum if anyone's got any suggestions or find any issues the changes around the site? So
yes,
look out for that as well.
So at the moment, I'll actually have to make a thread for that, because at the moment it's only in the coaches forum, but I'll make a thread for that in the feedback board of the Fan Footy forums, which of course you can access from the new menus, which of course did they debut last week, or was it just this week? I think it was this week, Molly.
I think they're still rolling out to all parts of the site.
That's
but
right.
They look good in the ones that they're in.
Yeah, there were a few little teething issues from Firefox users and what have you, but anyway, that's the way things happen at Fan Footy. It's all done by the seat of the pants, so that's the way it's always been done and the way it always will be, I suppose. But anyway, as the show has always been, yes.
That's right.
Okay, that'll be it for the Coach's Box for this week. Thank you, Molly, and thank everyone on the chat, and congratulations to Juzzo7, and I shall get that email to you forthwith. And just a reminder, so I forgot to mention this in the show last week, you can actually get 10% off Capstar AFL Club caps yourself. I believe they're new era caps, like Eddie Betts and Mitch Robinson wear. And you can get 10% off those by entering in the code FANFOOTY10 into the place where you enter the codes in, and you get 10% off those items. So as with last week, I will put in a link in the show notes, and we shall see you guys next week.
All right, see you guys.